Hey everyone, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever and whatever you are watching this show at. Welcome back to the Product Uncensored show. My name is Colin and this is episode 41. It is sort of a new era, I guess. We finished the milestone episode of episode 40. For those of you who remember, I was saying like, you know, the show has officially gone into midlife crisis. But yeah, today we have a new setup going. Check out the new layout, the new background. Let me know what you think. So yeah, enough of that kerfuffle. Today we have a very, very interesting guest. All our guests are always interesting, I hope. You know, you feel the same as me. It is someone who has jumped on the rocket ship of startups, all pun intended, dealing with startups from as far as Africa all the way to Nepal. She has worked with Rocket Internet, and she is now the Chief Product Officer of Daras, one of the leading e-commerce platforms in South Asia. Not Southeast Asia, yeah, South Asia outside of India. They employ over 1,000 people. She manages a team of over 60. Please welcome to the show, Tatiana Pelares. Welcome to the show, Tatiana.
Hi, Colin. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure being here.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope I did justice to your surname, but I didn't do too much. Hopefully it was still the 7 out of 10. So.
Yes, 7 out of 10.
Okay, fantastic. Fantastic. I'm super excited to have Tatiana on the show. I think for those of you who've been following the show for a while now, you know that I've been really trying to bring more exposure of female product leaders within the region. And so I was really, really happy when Tatiana agreed to come on to the show. So yeah, thank you so much for that, Tatiana. Maybe as a start, maybe you can give us the, you know, 1 minute elevator pitch of who Tatiana is.
Yeah, sure. So I, as you've mentioned, I'm now leading the product team at Daras. Daras is the number one e-commerce in the five regions where we are in South Asia: Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, Myanmar, and Sri Lanka. And I've been doing this role for 6 years now, and it's I would say it's almost my dream job. It's on an area that I really like. I really love emerging countries, and I've been working with e-commerce in emerging countries for quite a while now, more than half of my career. I love product, and it also has a very special meaning for me to be in this area and being a woman and being in tech, which is something that is not very common. So I feel like it can be, you know, me doing my plain old thing. It can be an example for others to know that, you know, if I can do it, they also can do it.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the things that is not talked about enough is about women leadership within product. You know, there, and you know, it's really good that we're beginning to see groups like Women in Tech, Women in Product, they're coming up. I think it's quite important. I was just looking even at, let's say even we look at the stats of this show, there are actually a high number of female listeners as well. But if you look at the ratios between male and female on this show, it's quite obviously skewed to one gender. So yeah, hopefully we will continue to try and get as many female leaders as we can. I know that I have personally gotten feedback about listeners and viewers who've been very happy to hear from another female leader how they made it, you know, what were their challenges. So maybe Tatiana, we might go into that. I don't know. Let's see where the conversation takes us. But let's start with you. You are originally from Portugal, right?
Yeah. So, pretty far away from Singapore, where I am now. Yes, right,
exactly,
now.
Exactly. So that was going to be my first question. Can you tell us how did you start in Portugal? I guess this will be the whole story of, you know, A, how did you get involved with startups, and B, how did that get you from Portugal to Singapore?
Yeah, so it's a very curious story because when I started out, I actually studied journalism and communication sciences in university in Portugal, and I never thought, that I would, do products. To be very honest, I didn't know what product was, and even when I started doing it, I still didn't know what it was. So I kind of stumbled into products because I was doing a post graduation, and I wanted to start working while still studying. And I found a startup that needed someone with more communication skills. So I joined them. It was a very, very small startup. And exactly at the time that I joined, they got a big client, and suddenly they needed someone to just manage the client. And it was a tech startup, so they provided tech services. It was a UK client that wanted to digitize their classifieds newspapers. So at the time, everything was still paper. So they needed someone to just manage the account, and I started to manage the account. Just I spoke English, and I was able to understand what they wanted. And then, okay, now you need to talk with the tech team and tell them what does the client want. Okay, now we need to set up a Facebook page. We need to do Google Ads, AdWords. So I was doing everything. Okay, now what the client wants is ready. We need someone to test it. I was testing it. So it was like, it was not a one-woman show because obviously there was a tech team. I don't know how to code. There was also a design. There was one person doing the design. And obviously, my manager at the time was also the one that could really translate more than requests into tech. Because everything was new to me. I didn't know what an API was. And I think that's because I stumbled into it. I started to be very curious, and I started to really like it. I know this creative process, and then, the rush of launching something, seeing the adoption, seeing how people react to it, and then just constantly think of new ways to improve adoption, and to make the product better. I kind of fell in love with it, and I stayed there. Actually, I stayed at that company for quite a while. I think it took me about 1 year to discover that, there was a name for what I was doing, which is like a product owner or project management, some sort of a mix between the two. I mean, with added responsibilities as QA and marketeer and everything else. But I think that really, helped me a lot, to be able to perform all of those tasks. Because now, despite the fact that I'm a CPO, and I'm kind of like at the top of the pyramid, I know very well, and I know I felt what it takes to actually perform each single one of the jobs that it takes to get a product launch. So I think that was it was very, very much by accident, but I think it really worked well in my favor as well.
Okay. Thank you for that. I think one of the really good things that you mentioned, which I just wanted to sort of highlight, right? Because when you joined that company, you were doing everything, right? So to speak, because whether it was the Google Ads, whether it was talking to the clients. And I think this is sort of it will echo what I say quite a bit in other episodes that you watch. Because the more you get to do at the beginning is I think the more you learn. So don't I know sometimes it feels like, oh, why should I be doing this? Isn't person A there to do it? Isn't department B there to do it? But I think the more you understand what other people are doing, what other teams are doing, it's always going to be beneficial. There's never been a downside to knowing more. And in a role such as product management, especially when you are sort of, the person who needs to kind of know everything, kind of need to pull it all together, I think never downplay the fact that you have opportunities to do more. So I would actually say, for those who are listening or watching, don't knock on that just because it's not the sexy part of product management where you get to, whip out the latest framework or, do the latest thing, doesn't mean that it's not valuable. As Tatiana has very rightfully mentioned, even now, as a CPO for herself, you know, she understands what the rest of her team are doing. So that's really fantastic. So getting on to that second question, how did you end up in Singapore from all the way in Portugal, you know, sunny Portugal?
Yeah, so then, you know, after a while I understood, you know, okay, product is a thing and there's actually a right way and a wrong way to do it. And it's not so much about the right way and the wrong way, but, you know, as I was doing, you know, I was starting to face problems, you know, how do we mitigate the fact that, you know, what I say to the tech team is sometimes not well communicated. Is there a better way to do it? You know, at the time, Agile was and Scrum was all the rage. So, you know, I started to learn more about these frameworks and I wanted to implement them. But, you know, the company where I was was very small. So I wanted something bigger where, you know, I could really test out these things and I could learn more. And that's when I moved to Rocket Internet. So there I was responsible for order management systems and fulfillment systems. We were working with, I think, over 15 countries at the time. It was Lazada, Zalora, West Wing in Europe, Jumia in Africa. So it was a very small team shipping things for half of the world. And that gave me, I think that was the biggest learning of my career, actually, being exposed to all of that, understanding, you know, the concerns around scalability. And I learned a lot also from the tech, QA, how to really do it professionally at a world level. And then, you know, this was still in Porto. There's a Porto Tech Center there that actually is one of the tech bases for Rocket Internet. It still exists. And then because Daraz was also one of the clients at the time, what happened is Daraz was about to be acquired by Alibaba. They needed to set up their own product team. So we were already working together. They liked my work and they invited me to join this new adventure with one of the biggest world partners in e-commerce in the world. So it was a very easy yes for me. So I joined about 6 years ago. And the challenge was to set up the entire team. At the time, we were bringing still the systems that we were using in-house. But 3 months later, the acquisition actually was officialized. And then we started working on trying to get Alibaba Tech in-house, which was more sophisticated than what we had at the time. So we went through a crazy ride of replacing all the systems in 4 months. It was a project with more than 400 people. Yeah. And right after 4 months, we had 11/11 campaign. So it was, I think, one of the biggest challenges in my career as well. How do you make it work with the entire company?
Were you mainly replacing the logistics part of it, the inventory
everything.
Part of everything?
Everything. App, website, informants. App, website, all the logistics systems, all the order management systems, everything was replaced in 4 months.
How big was the team? Like, how many...
It was over 400 people involved in the project.
Okay, so let's break this down. Sorry, I'm just supremely impressed, amused, confused. Like, add whatever, you know.
I still can't believe it myself.
So let's say 400 people. Let's assume that each squad, cross-functional squad that has, you know, everybody from your back-end engineer, front-end engineer, QA, tester, etc., blah, blah, blah. Let's say it's 10 people in a squad. That's 40 squads. And that's still, I think, still quite insane given the amount of things that
What we were doing at the time was copying the systems. And Lazada had gone through something very similar, I think a year before, something like that. So they had experience in doing it. It just, it took them, I think, about a year to do it for Lazada because it was the first one. So when we came in, we wanted to replicate the project. But of course, we need to vet everything because although it's still an e-commerce business, the way that we work, I would say about 10% is very localized. So we had to go through that process of understanding if the systems do work for us or not. And then we wanted to copy the entire systems to us and then be able to manage it on our own. Obviously, there's still like cooperation. So we look at it as the core systems are still provided by Alibaba tech team, and we have in-house tech team cooperating and working with them. And then, you know, we call it the business layer, you know, is owned and managed by that as tech team. So that's what we needed to set up in 4 months. We didn't build the systems from scratch.
Okay.
But there was still a lot of development that had to go in terms of localization and bringing it. It was 5 countries at the same time as well. Not exactly at the same time, but I think phased within 3 weeks.
Okay. I mean, it's still insane, by the way. For the record, I feel that trying to either copy something or integrate something with something that is already existing is always harder than trying to build it from scratch. That's my personal opinion. Yeah, that's why, you know, mad props to you and the team that managed to do it in 4 months. That is just insane. Okay, let's go down this path. You know, since it's really interesting where we're going to, right? When you joined, so if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that you joined Daras as the CPO as part of the acquisition by Alibaba. Is that kind of correct?
Yeah, I joined just before it became official. So of course we joined for that that adventure, let's say. So we knew that it was about to happen. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about, you know, now you've joined. Now it's their new owners, and you know what they want to do. How did you sort of get acclimatized? Because part of joining the Daras, you know, super product was to move to Singapore as one. So there is that point of physical relocation. And Daras, for those of you who don't know, they operate mainly in South Asia. So it's countries like Pakistan, Nepal, Sri Lanka. So also having to sort of adjust to a new market, trying to understand a new market. And also at that time, I'm guessing you may not have inherited a very big product team as well. So like all these changes, can you tell everyone, like, you know, how did you do it? Like in your head, in Tatiana's head, when she first joined Daras, like how did you create your checklist of these are the things that I need to do in order to succeed in my new role? Like A, do this, B, do that, you know?
But just to give a bit of context there, I was meant to go to Dubai, but at the time there was no Singapore entity for Daras, and then it became a need because of the cooperation between Daras and Alibaba and all the other companies in the group, now the AIDC group. But at the time I was meant to go and stay and live in Dubai. It just happened that throughout this process was so intense and so crazy that I actually went to Pakistan, which is our biggest country, and we had a company apartment there, and I had my stuff there, which was just, you know, waiting for me to actually move to Dubai. But I went into 1.5 years of constant traveling every week on a plane. So I had no time, I had no house, I had had no fixed, I always returned to that apartment in Pakistan. So in a way, I lived 1.5 years in Pakistan. It just, it was just constantly on planes, going to our countries, coming to Singapore, going to China, to make all of this work, right? So I think, I've mentioned that right after I started this project of replacing all our systems also started. So, and that was 4 months. So it's extremely crazy. And it was constant traveling just to try to bring everyone together, understanding how the systems works and seeing how Lazada was using them and whether or not they would make sense for Daras. So it was pretty intense. So only after 1.5 years is that I got the opportunity to actually find a house. And that's when I, at the time, you know, the need for Singapore was pretty clear for that reason. That's why I ended up settling in Singapore. Yeah. So meanwhile, I kind of lost track of your original question, but that was the question was about what was my checklist. To be very honest, I don't think I had time to keep a checklist because everything was happening so fast, and it was just trying to understand, like, okay, what are the main problems that I have to solve today, and just solve them. So every day was kind of like doing a mental checklist, like, what do I need to solve today, and just solve for that, and you know, hopefully the list of problems will become smaller and smaller and smaller, and then to a point where it's breathable again. Yeah, but it was pretty intense. Pretty intense for 1.5 years. I think one of the reasons why I joined that is I really wanted to travel and get to know more of the world. And, you know, after this 1.5 years just constantly on a plane, I was like, okay, I'm ready to settle down now and spend at least 2 or 3 weeks without seeing an airport.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that really sounds very grueling, right? Pretty much living out of a suitcase. But interesting that you were in Pakistan. Was Pakistan at that time the main office or operations location outside of Dubai, or was it because Pakistan is the biggest market revenue wise?
Yeah, it's the biggest market, and it's where the regional team sat mostly at the time. So there was a Dubai setup mostly for expats or people that were coming out of the region and also wanted to move out. But Pakistan has always been, and it still is, the biggest hub for regional teams to meet.
I see. Okay. So during that time, right, you know, this 1.5 years, or maybe even during the initial 4 months where I was just crazy trying to, you know, fix this problem, fight that fire, get this done, how did you maintain the ability? Because I think one of the very underappreciated things that I see in leaders in big companies, especially product leaders, right? So I'm not talking about just any leader, but product leaders, is this ability to go deep, but also to go wide, right? And from what you're explaining, there was a need to really go deep and wide at the same time. Everyone knows they only 24 hours in a day. So did you have a personal system of how you would, you know, so I'll give you context to this, right? So you read some of the leaders, what they tell you is they have a system. In the first 4 hours of the day, I do this and then I do that. Some have frameworks that they use to sort of set it up. You know, what is the Tatiana way?
Yeah, a lot of people ask me that because they seem to think I'm I'm very organized and I'm very structured, and I am in terms of processes for the team. But for me, for myself, I actually don't have anything. Everything lives in my head, which I know it's not the best way to do it. You know, if there's any system, I would say is something very agile, which is to understand, like, what is it that I need to solve now? Like, what is my biggest problem? And let's solve our biggest problem. And just continuously check on that at the different levels. So at a strategic level, at a more planning level, or then at tactical level, like implementation, and try to understand what is the biggest problem there and just solve it. And then next day you have a different one, or, you know, next week or next month, depending on how much time it takes you. But I'm not very structured. I don't have like a hidden secret there.
I mean, you know, I don't know how it sounds for you, but for me, and I think for a lot of people, I think that's quite comforting, right? You don't have to be like this. You don't need some superpower of any sort. Like, you know, just figure out in your head what needs to be done and go do it. So, yes, thank you.
I just think that sometimes, you know, people look at frameworks and systems and they think they're gonna, you know, if I only had the right system or the right framework, it was solved. I really don't believe that. You know, I think you need to know the frameworks, you need to know the systems to understand what can best work for you. But, you know, usually, even in a company, there's not one single system that, works. You know, different teams have different needs, different problems have different needs. So I would say my system is just keep it simple. Just don't implement a framework if there's not a problem to be solved, you know. Just go with whatever is there. If it's working, just keep it that way. Even though, you know, there's a lot of hype around now. There's always like a new system coming up, a new framework coming up. But, you know, don't overcomplicate it. Up until very recently, like, we didn't have a proper prioritization system as well, because, you know, we just everyone kind of agreed based on the data we have, based on the research we have, like, what are the right priorities. There was not, or if we disagree, we just could just come to a meeting and it would be solved. And so because of that, there's no, in my opinion, there's no need to, you know, go and bring a framework for prioritization if prioritization is not a problem. So I think my best advice here is don't overcomplicate. Keep it simple, which is also a framework. Keep it simple. And just solve for the problems you have.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's a good point, right? You know, if it's not broken, don't fix it. But I guess then my follow-up question would be, and again, I'm trying to sort of tease out a little bit, you know, what Tatiana is like as a product leader, right? Because solving problems are good, knowing, you know, you can only solve, you know, what's right in front of you. But there is also there's always this tension that lives within product between fighting fires and trying to solve for the medium term, trying to solve for the longer term. So in your opinion or your experience, right, what is a good way of learning how to do that? Because there's always going to be, you know, problems that you need to fix now that gives you benefits now versus, you know, what's in the medium term, what's in the long term. But there's always fixed amount of bandwidth for, you know, the tech team or for the web team or, you know, whatever the team may be.
Yeah, I think it's really important to create time to solve the root causes. And here it does depend on I think it starts with knowing what is the right problem. The right problem, the one that has the biggest impact, is the one that you should focus your time on. And this seems very simple to say. It's not simple at all. You know, product people are always being pushed around, pulled around to focus on everything. But having that focus on the right problem is going to make time for everything that you need. So, and then go to the root cause of that problem and fix it. And that, I think, it's valid for different levels that you were mentioning, right? The strategy, the planning, the tactical. If you understand what is the right problem to solve for, right? Strategically, when we're you know, creating a roadmap and thinking, okay, for the next year, what are the things that we should be building and the problems that we should be solving? Obviously, they're always like quite big problems and difficult to digest, right? Then you have to figure out what's the how. Mm. But, you know, it always starts with identifying the problem and then making sure you fix it, you know, understand the root cause, go through the iterations. And, you know, it's not going to be solved maybe in the first iteration, but go through it, stick to it until you actually fix it. I usually say to my team, you know, if you have the right problem, then it's just a matter of time, because you'll go through all the iterations, eventually you're going to solve it. But if you have the wrong problem, then no matter how many iterations you go through, you're never going to solve, you know, what you're trying to solve, because you identified the wrong problem. So here is not a question of time. It's really, you know, it's just a waste of time, actually, because you might be solving everything else, but you're not solving the root cause, you know, the thing that you really, you know, which might be a problem, but might be a goal, right? You know, in essence, it's the same. So really making sure that you have the right problem or the right opportunity and that you're focusing on it, it's the most important thing, I think.
Okay. Thank you for that. Speaking about time, I wanted to sort of also pick your brain a little bit about this, right? Constant challenges, especially within the whole product industry on its own, is that, like you said earlier, right? Product people are also always being pushed. There's always going to be that need to push and pull, that tension. And, you know, a lot of times, product folks are just doing. You're just having to do a lot of things. But it's also where I think the danger comes, right? Like I think you were saying, you need time to fix things. And I believe that there's also a critical need for product people to be able to, you know, sit down and say, I need time to figure out how to fix this, right? It's not just, you know, going from meeting to meeting, which, by the way, I think is a, you know, this number one problem for a lot of product people, just meetings all over the place. How do you do it, and how do you make sure that, you know, how do you make sure your team also is able to handle these kinds of things, right? Being able to split between the two.
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I think you can imagine that, you know, building a product team in a company that was operating without a product team, there's a lot of challenges. Being able to put products at the center of the team and, you know, driving the strategy is something that takes years to get there. Because as soon as you have a small team, it becomes an implementation team where, you know, suddenly the whole company sees an avenue of, oh, I finally can get the things that I needed for years. So here's like my entire wish list. And then there's no time for the product team to actually do all the research, all the analysis that they need to understand what is the right problem to solve. So my approach is that you cannot come and say, okay, we need to shift the role, and now we're going to define and we're going to own our roadmap, and now we're going to define what are the right problems to fix, just like that. You first need to show that you bring more value to the table when you are doing it. And in order to do that, you need to carve out time, obviously, to understand your analysis, to talk with the customers, to understand what are their problems, to know more about the business than actually the business teams. And when you do that, then we can anticipate, and then we can suggest first what should be the right things on the roadmap. And this is what we did. And then the business teams understood that, okay, they have better ideas than we have. They have more, the things that they are putting on the table are actually more supported with data than, you know, what we have. And we have all the benchmarks of what's happening in other e-commerces as well. So we came fully prepared with our suggestions. And I think in a company where with a culture where the best idea wins, that works. And that's also what we have at Taraz, and that's why I also like to work at Taraz. Obviously, not to say that the roadmap is 100% owned by the product team. We do work very closely with the business team, but so not all ideas have to be from the product team. But the product team does have a say in terms of what goes in and what doesn't go in. And we have to agree and accept others' ideas as if they were our own, if we also see that they are better supported and they are more valid than the ones that we came and brought to the table. I think that's where we are right now. I think it's a very good place for very good positioning for the team, where, you know, people really feel like they own the roadmap and they can cooperate with the business together, and the business is more focused on trying to identify the problem, trying to run the operations, the day-to-day. But we don't have now a lot of cases where they come and say, okay, come with a solution and say, you know, just build a button, you know, build, you know, this feature. We were able to change the mindset and work in that way. It takes years, I have to say. It's not a easy process, but it's about coming to the table with more value and showing more value. People will see that and they will want more of that. So they will slowly start coming to us and say, okay, what do you think that we should do here? Because, you know, you had such a good idea last time. Suddenly the culture changes.
Okay. Great point, by the way. I think I mentioned this even in another session with, I think it was Fabian, the episode with Fabian, who's now the CPO at Lineman Wong Nai. You know, sometimes as product people, we want to solve the problem. Like you say, right? You come in and suddenly, oh, I want to solve the problem. And sometimes it's not that easy, right? You're trying to change. You're not just trying to change the mindset of one particular person. You're trying to change an entire system that was there. Especially if you're coming into not a new company. So like, you know, even like you mentioned, Tatiana, going into Daras at that point in time, you know, they were doing, you know, I'm assuming they kind of been doing that badly, but they were doing quite well without that product function. And suddenly now they're like, oh, you've got this product thing. And yeah, I really laughed, you know, when you said that, you know, when the product team was first introduced, you know, it felt like everyone suddenly had a almost like a Mr. or Mrs. Fix-It, right? You know, like, oh, yeah, I need to do this and that. You know, it's hilarious because the number of times that I've gone through that, you know, with myself and with my team, you know, it's always hilarious because it's the sign of, I guess it's a sign of maturing, you know, an organization that is maturing to embrace product. First of all, they realize that, okay, I know what these folks are doing. Not really, but you know, at least I know I go to them for my problems, right? So yeah, at the first stage is always the you're the fix it person, you know, go fix this for me. So I just thought that was hilarious. Sorry, I want to keep going down this rabbit hole for a bit, right? You were talking about how you had to know the business better than the business, right? In order to sort of win them over. And that's something, that's a question that I do get quite a bit from product leaders as well. You know, like how do you train your team? So this is more about, you know, either the mentoring or teaching part about how important it is to bring data, right? You know, what was that famous saying, right? In God we trust, everyone else brings data, right? And I think data is a big part of that. How did you build that muscle, I guess, within the Daras product team to really be able to drive that through?
Well, I'm really happy you make that question because that's something that I'm very passionate about. We have very strict training processes within Daras. So we have individual growth plans and everyone has one, where we go through a list of about 70 skill sets that any product person needs to have. And every month we select one, or the manager selects one for that person. I mean, they select together, but it's mostly for that person to research on. So it can be stakeholder management, how to say no. It can be how do you prepare a proper gap analysis. It can be, it's really depends on what the problem that person is facing now. And it goes back to, you know, my way of thinking, which is find the right problem and just solve that one. So we look at each individual within the team and we try to find, okay, what is the thing that they need to improve on the most? And we work on that. And then the manager will also be focused on that more, you know, with more focus in that month, and they will exchange a lot of feedback around that selected skill on that month. Ideally, there should be an improvement at the end of the month. If it's not solved, you know, the focus continues until it gets solved. And this means that, you know, at the end of 1 year, which is we actually do appraisals twice a year, but at the end of 1 year, that person could have had the opportunity to really work on 12 problems or 12 things to improve, which is quite a lot in a very intensive way with a manager focus. So that is one. The other one is we do two training department level. One is we have, which I'm not sure it's actually training, but we have a book club. And we go through technical books. Sometimes to have a break of technical books, we do a little bit more fictional or inspiring book. But I think that has been one of the best ways to upskill the team. Because if you read about, you know, if you read about continuous discovery, or if you read the Simplicity Playbook, you start to learn frameworks and you start to learn, you know, what is the right mindset. And we can go through a book in about 2-3 months. And then the other thing that we do is it's master classes. We just stole the concept of master classes that are out there. And you know, I believe that everyone has something to teach. And when we hire, I also try to hire people that have the skill sets that we need at department level as well, because some people are just better at communication, others are more tech, others are more design oriented, and you need to have a good mix and match of people in the entire department so you can have all the skill sets that you need in the department. And we select someone that has something to teach, and that person just puts together a masterclass, or it can be masterclasses on, you know, hard skills like using Figma, which is something that we use for our design team. And it can be something like, how do we really manage stakeholders with data, and how do we create data as well to bring that to the table and convince the stakeholder that, you know, our solution is better. So it's very different topics, and I feel like that has really helped the team to grow, to understand the mindset and to understand the frameworks. They may choose to apply them or not, or, you know, just cherry pick whatever works for them. But that, I think, has been single-handedly the most important thing in terms of getting the right talent in the department. And also it's something that people really value. They feel like they are growing. It's something that it takes a bit of convincing as well, because you're in the middle of, like you've mentioned, you're in the middle of fires, and suddenly you're going to talk for an hour about a book saying, you know, that you should take time for research. So sometimes it can be a bit crazy or twilight zone, but it's really important to take that time to stay up to date with what's happening in product, stay up to date with what's happening in e-commerce, check the trends, go back to the basics sometimes. It's really, really important to carve out time. So we have at least 1 hour a week that we dedicate to that, plus all the reading that happens outside. And maybe more than that, because there's also the individual growth plans that are one hour a month. So.
Okay. So I wanted to sort of contrast what you just said with something that we talked about earlier, right? So like you're talking about, you know, Teresa Torres's continuous discovery, or you're talking about the simplicity mindset or frameworks. But at the same time, right, we were also talking about how, you know, you don't just introduce frameworks for the sake of doing it. How do you manage that? Because it's one thing to get the team excited with a book club to talk about continuous discovery, and you realize that, oh, you know, we haven't done this, we should go and do it, versus, but yeah, kind of now is not the time. Just like you said, right, you go up there and talk about 1 hour about the importance of research, and you're literally in the middle of a fire. How do you manage that tension? Because, it, you know, you kind of know that you need to implement something, but at the same time, you also know that you need to find the right time for it.
Yeah, so usually everything's kind of, in terms of frameworks and processes, everything's been pushed by me. So I choose the book already with that in mind. So it's the right book at the right time. Okay. And then at the end of the book, we'll go and implement what makes sense. I think another part of it is like, if I don't want to implement the frameworks, then, you know, we can go back to product basics, because there's so much there as well. But I try to time it in a way that, you know, if we read the continuous discovery, then we're going to implement at least part of it. And that's something that I'm actually investing more now, right now, with the team, is on continuous discovery.
Okay. Thank you for that, you know, because there was something that I was really like curious to understand. So that's good to know. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, since we've been talking a little bit about the teams and what they do, how hard is it, or, you know, that's a terrible question. How do you properly manage a distributed team? Because, like, you know, you're based in Singapore. I think you're saying that there is a team that's in Dubai, there's a team that's in Pakistan. And I'm talking, you know, mainly the product team that you directly manage. I guess, yeah, how do you make sure that you know, and again, sorry, I need to give a little bit more context because I realized that this is a super loaded question with no context, right? Like right now, the trend that we're seeing is that companies are growing, especially companies the size of Daraz, which goes really, really big. You already understand that there is no way you can keep all your product people co-located. It's always going to be distributed. But with the distribution comes loss of fidelity, right? So it's always going to be harder to understand what team A is doing, person B is doing. And also at the same time, making sure that, you know, as the person that's on top of the product chain, to also keep a pulse on, oh, Mr. A or Miss B, how are they doing? So how do you do that?
Yeah, I don't think there's a simple question to that. There's different challenges. There's the culture aspect of it. There's the actual work and dependencies as well. So I think first comes with hiring. So if you hire the people already with the right mindset, with the right culture, I think that's very important. To me, culture of the team is, you know, what makes it or breaks it. If you have a rotten apple, it spreads very easily and things just stop working. So more than, you know, more than managing cross dependencies and things like that. So for me, it really starts with hiring, and I talk with everyone that joins the team to do that culture vetting. I think you cannot lose the face-to-face. So we do travel, and mostly most of my direct reporters are in Singapore, actually, but their teams are not. So they travel quite a while, quite a bit. Not too much, not like 4.5 years every week, yeah, on a plane. But they travel, you know, every few months, and they get to talk face to face with the team. We also do workshops to keep the team together to build a bond. I think what's important is make sure that at least domain wise, which is how we split, like there's a seller team, there's a buyer team, that you try to keep it in one place. That I think that works better. In terms of, you know, the actual scope, I think it's very, very important to have a very clear vision. And one thing that I do, and I feel like I over communicate the vision, the strategy behind the roadmap. I give a lot of information. So every time we have regular management meetings, every time there's something important there, first thing that I do is I share it with the chat of the team, if I can. But everything that I can, I will share it right away with the team to make sure that they are always in the loop and they understand the whys of what we're doing. I think sometimes very ironic that, you know, we say to the product owners or product designers or whatever project managers, whatever role we have, is that you need to understand the why of your project, and then, you know, not enough information is coming from a corporate level to them. So we don't give them the whys, but then we expect them to know the whys that have. So if you're not questioning the overall strategy, like how will you know to question the project in itself, right? So. Mm-hmm. I try to give as much as information so everyone is aligned. Then I think it's also to accept a bit of chaos. It's never going to be perfect. And I think that it takes a very specific type of person to embark on this product journey, which is we need to be able to thrive on chaos. And I think everyone, our entire lives, we try to manage chaos and, you know, get all of these frameworks, all of these processes to just try to manage chaos. At least from my experience, I think that sometimes you just have to embrace it up to a certain degree. And, you know, if it's not dysfunctional, if it's not really hurting the speed, if it's not really hurting your mental health, a little bit of chaos will be always part of the product role. You just have to learn how to adjust to it. Know your POCs, know your stakeholders. If there's an unclarity, just go and clarify. I think that's what works. We actually have a team in Singapore. The biggest team is in Pakistan. We have a team in Bangladesh and a very small team in Sri Lanka. The tech team follows the same pattern, except that we also have a tech team in China.
Okay, okay. Yeah, because obviously there is the technology that comes from the Alibaba group as well, so it kind of makes sense, right? Okay, okay. So now I have a very interesting question for you. I mean, this had already happened pre-COVID, but I think COVID just accelerated all of this, which is this whole idea of being able to do things remote, especially within tech organizations, and, you know, kind of product is lumped under that umbrella, that you can just do things remote. Like, you know, I don't ever have to see somebody's face, you know, not physically anyway. And that as long as I'm able to do my work, I should be able to work out of anywhere. And the reason why I'm asking this is you just mentioned the different locations that Daras has product and tech people based out of. But there are also a lot of companies, especially companies that are the size of Daras, who are choosing to go down the path of, you know what, we'll hire from anywhere as long as you have overlapping time zones, and then we'll do this fully remote approach. What are your thoughts about that? Like, is that something that you prefer, or is it something that you don't think will ever happen in Daras? You know?
So I value talent over anything else. And if I have talent that I really want to keep, and that is really set on remote or really set on coming to work, to the office every day, I'm okay with that. I will try to, you know, my main concern will be to retain talent. So I have people that are almost fully remote, not because, you know, they're working in Bali, just because of the family circumstances, they're working in a different city. But these are very exceptional cases. The rule is actually to come to the office at least 3 days a week in Singapore. And I think that's the overall rule. And, you know, if there's circumstances, special circumstances, like you just had a baby and, you know, need to breastfeed, it's much more comfortable to do it from home. Yeah. I'm also okay, you know, that you don't come to the office at least, you know, while the baby is still 6 months or something like that, right? I think to me is, I really value the individual more, and I try to understand what does the individual need, and then do that. Overall, I think there's pros and cons to both. And to me, I think I really gained something by speaking face to face to people and just being on those, you know, water cooler talks and just, you know, being able to just get up and talk to people, you know, that are sitting next to me in the office, and just have a bit of, you know, just a chat about how's your life in general, that you do that a lot more if you're in the office than if you're at home. But I also take a lot from, you know, just being able to be at home. I think it gives you a lot more focus time as well. So to me, I personally prefer this hybrid method where, you know, sometimes you go to the office, sometimes you stay at home, and you can actually not have fixed days and you can tailor that according to your agenda. Like, I have important meetings, I like to do them face to face. And usually, you know, when I'm usually more involved in complex problems, and, you know, we use the whiteboard a lot. And I feel like if you try to do that online, you still can. But you know, there's a bit more friction. It's not an impediment, but there's usually a bit more friction. So I like to, you know, when I have these complex meetings, I like to be at the office face to face to people. But even said that, I have people that report to me that are in Pakistan, and then I don't have that luxury. So we try to come a little bit more prepared to the meetings with already all the flow charts, and again, you can do it. My preference would be that we don't have to do it always like that, but you still can do it, and it works, and so we are doing it. So I don't think I think different people will have different needs, and they will also have different needs throughout their career. So there's special circumstances right now, or, you know, the context is different, and sometimes people just, you know, want to go to Bali for a month, but they still want to go from there. And, you know, as long as they show up and do the work, I'm also okay to make some exceptions like that. I I think you need to trust your team. You also need to give them something back because they spend so many hours sometimes working outside of their working hours, and you know, because there's special events, because there's peaks, there's important launches. Sometimes you also need to give something back, and if it's really important to them, some special way of working. I'm usually okay with that.
I totally hear you. I was just talking with one of my staff just the other day, because again, you know, this whole idea now of, you know, you're based somewhere, your team, you know, direct report is not exactly there, right? And we're just talking about how, you know, there's just like, you know, whiteboarding and, you know, using like a fig jam board or something, or a mural board, just doesn't cut the same, right? There's still a difference. Like you said, there's more friction when it's virtual. So we're just joking, you know, imagine if we could have, you know, a virtual meeting where you can draw just based on what you're imagining. Like, yeah, that'd be so cool. That's like, no, then there's a problem, right? Then you got to make sure that you're focusing on, like, imagine if you suddenly thought about, oh, I'm hungry and I'm thinking about a burger, and suddenly a burger shows up on your whiteboard. So yeah, I definitely agree with you. Like, that's just something about whiteboarding. And recently as well, you know, I was with one of my designers, and we were like designing and things like that. And I mean, I don't draw very well, but you know, just the fact of being able to do it together, it just hits different than doing it virtually. So yeah, fully agreed there. Question for you. So this is about Tatiana, the CPO, right? At your level, obviously, you're dealing a lot more with strategic, initiatives or things of that nature. And one of the things that is always interesting to hear about, especially from people who are not in that position, is how do you deal with not being able, because I think this goes back to one of the earlier things that we're talking about, right? The product doesn't fully own the roadmap. It owns a lot of it, hopefully, but there's always going to be things that, you know, for example, let's say, let's take a theoretical example, right? Let's say you're saying that, you know what, AI is the future of everything. We need to plonk AI, you know, everything that we do, you know, from helping the buyer be able to create good descriptions of their products, to helping sellers do this and that, you know, whatever that scenario is, right? And then at a strategic level, you're saying, no, this is not the way that we're going because of XYZ. How do you deal with that as the topmost product person in Daras, and making sure that, you know, to take a quote of Jeff Bezos, right? You disagree and commit. How do you deal with that as the CPO?
Yeah, we actually don't have a lot of that friction at Daras. We are very close-knit. We've gone through that 4 months battle in implementing systems, which, you know, it just forms a team. So we are very lucky on that, and we really have this mindset of the best idea wins. So if any of us disagrees, we just try to bring data to convince the others. So I think we were always able to, you know, solve our different points of view with that, because we really hear each other out. And so sometimes one idea starts in one way, but then because of the different inputs that are there, it turns out to be slightly different. So it's not the initial idea that I disagreed with. And then because it has evolved somehow with my opinion, then I'm okay with it already. So I think that's very important. And that's something that takes a lot of time to build. And I think that's what every C-level should try to build. And you know, I think this mindset of being very, not having hippos in the room and just trying to bring as much data, or it can be anecdotal data as well. It can be, you know, just put your whatever reasonings you have on the table. And you know, this AI hype, for example, it can be about, you know, our sellers don't know enough about e-commerce and the AI can solve for them. I also have a very practical approach, which is, you know, sometimes there's no data. And going back to just doing the full research takes more time than actually doing an MVP and testing it out. So let's just test it out. I might disagree, but you know, I'm willing to be convinced otherwise, and we just test it out and we see whether it works or not. So I think you really need, because I really try to shy away, and I don't really like to go into discussions of my opinion versus your opinion, because it's just opinions. It doesn't really solve anything. You know, you can argue as much as you want, but it's still one opinion versus the other opinion. Who's right? I mean, no one is right at this point, because it should not be about opinions, right? So no one is right. And I don't like to have, I don't like to linger into those discussions. So yeah, I think it's, I don't really face that much that, because I'm really heard and I've established, you know, everything that I said from the product team to bring value. And I think I've established that with me and the team, and everyone sees the value that we have, and everyone tries to seek out what we have to say about a specific problem because they recognize value at this point. So there might be cases where it's like, oh, top down, and it comes from the CEO, and okay, we have to do that. And we have both things have happened, which is we went and did research and we said, no, that's not the right idea. And our CEO listens. We came with data. He understood why was that not the right idea, and we didn't do it in the end. Or there's other cases where it's like very strategic and we need to do it, and we've done it and it works. And, you know, it was like a bet and a gamble on that idea, and it worked. And we didn't have enough data, or we didn't have data to say we think that's a bad idea. So we just went along with it. Let's try it and let's figure it out. So I think if you really have that curiosity mindset of exploring each other's ideas, being really willing to listen to others and change your own, and if you create this culture, I think those problems are not so frequent.
Okay, thank you, that's very enlightening. Good, and always good to hear from, you know, someone at your level as well. So thank you so much. So Tatiana, thank you once again for, you know, taking the time to really be candid and be very open with all the constant barrage of questions from my side as well. Did you have anything, you know, any last, you know, any pearls of wisdom that you'd like to share with our viewers and listeners as we close for this episode?
Well, that's a very loaded question, right, Colin? I think from my experience, what I can say is that if you're really passionate about products, it's a really beautiful role with a lot of meaningful contributions. I keep being amazed by the impact that we have in South Asia. Like, for example, we launched live streaming. And I saw a photo of a family that was gathered around the phone, and you could see that there was almost no electricity around, that they were outside, and the phone was on a wall that was probably hand-built. So very, very remote location in Pakistan. And, you know, I'm still very amazed that, you know, they are watching, they are using, you know, my app to watch something that, you know, is creating such a meaningful impact in their lives. I think that just if you have the passion, just trying to find the right place to that resonates with you, with a mission that resonates with you. And I think you can have a really, really beautiful career. I'm blessed every day by being able to do what I do. So just hang in there, you know, keep an eye on the long term, because the day to day can really be draining sometimes. But you know, yeah, next day there will be a different problem.
Yes. All right, thank you so much, Tatiana. I wish you and Daras all the best, and yeah, looking forward to hearing more about, you know, the way that Daras has impacted, you know, South Asia, So I hope, you know, one day we'll be able to do, you know, a second session of this and talk about all the things that have happened since then. Thank you so much, Tatiana. All right, so that was, sorry, I think I cut off Tatiana a little bit there. But yeah, that was Tatiana Pilares from Daras, the Chief Product Officer. And I think I really like how she ended it, especially by, you know, if you are passionate about it, it's a really beautiful role. I still hold to that a lot personally. And I really do hope that, you know, all of you product folk out there, you know, if you're struggling, like she said, you know, hang in there. Tomorrow will be a better day. And also, there's always going to be the next episode of the Product Uncensored Show. So thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Don't forget, give me feedback about this new format layout that we're doing. And yeah, hope to see you in the next episode. Have a nice day and bye-bye.